Our theme this hour is how people from different religions can reach out and talk with each other. Now, you might not think Peter Biebergall and Scott Korb would have much to say about religion. They seem to be thoroughly secular young men. They're both writers who love to gab about rock and roll, sex, and pop culture. But it turns out that faith and their search for God is what brought them together as friends. The added twist is that Peter is Jewish and Scott is Christian. Now they've written a book called The Faith Between Us. Biebergall told Dan Strangchamps that it wasn't easy to start this dialogue.
We found that in our lives, independently, before we even met, that we had become embarrassed about having a religious life. Our friends knew more about our sex lives than they did about our religious lives. But I had best friends that knew, you know, what kind of sex toys my wife and I bought, but they didn't know that I prayed. And we didn't realize how much of a disconnect there was until we met each other.
Was it hard to kind of come out to each other?
Yeah, Peter and I had been friends for, I don't know, probably 8 or 10 months. I started working as his editor. I was publishing a small literary magazine at the time. And our friendship had nothing to do with God for those 8 to 10 months.
So was there a moment when one of you said to the other, so, do you ever pray?
Well, that isn't the exact question, but it's a very similar one. We had gotten to the point where we were talking on the phone fairly regularly, and one day we had let enough slip, one that I was teaching catechism at my church, that I was going to church at all, that Peter would, you know, go to synagogue on Yom Kippur. And one day we were talking on the phone, and Peter tells a story, well, I'll tell it for him, but that his son was sitting at his feet playing with a Batman toy, and he just decided that that was the time that he would ask me, not if I prayed, but if I believed in God.
What did you say?
Well, I said yes. And at the time, I believed in God in a different way than I do now, but it sort of didn't matter. I mean, the spirit of the answer was still the same, and that is, yes, I believe in holiness. I believe in the will of God, and I believed in it then in sort of more literal terms, but now in sort of metaphorical terms.
It's funny the way you're describing it. It's a moment of such intimacy between two men.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's funny. A lot of people have commented that for them has what has been the most profound aspect of the book was less the religious stuff and more about just the kind of intimacy that we have as friends and that we're men. And I think that having to be vulnerable around issues of spirituality and religion, once you're vulnerable about that, there's nothing else that you have to feel like you have to protect anymore.
You're both coming from pretty different religious traditions. Peter, you're Jewish. Scott, you're Catholic. Both Abrahamic traditions, but still very different religions. Do those backgrounds pose any problems for the ways you end up talking about faith?
They didn't at first, but they have begun to more now, believe it or not. Well, there's two things to that. I think that it's been easier for Scott to participate in Jewish rituals, say with my family when we do Friday night, Shabbat. I think it's been much easier for him to participate in that than it has for me to participate in Christian worship, because there does seem to suggest a more literal engagement often with the Christian liturgy than, say, with the Jewish one. But recently, I want to tell you a story which I think highlights this. Scott and I were driving from Chicago to Wisconsin, and we had a long time to talk and have an argument about what it meant to believe. Now that, you know, our faith in God is different from what it had been, say, when we even first met and when we began writing this book together. I was trying to understand what Scott meant by not being able to believe in a personal God and how he had arrived at that by slowly giving up belief in some of the miracles that you read about in the New Testament. That he didn't start with not believing in God. He started with not believing that Jesus literally raised Lazarus from the dead, or that turned the, what is it?
Water into wine,
things like that. And that slowly that brought him to an idea that God itself was this miraculous business, that once he put aside all the miracles, that was the last miracle to go. And I couldn't understand that, because for me, God wasn't about miracles, that to believe in God didn't have anything to do with miracles. And Scott was finally able to explain to me that for him, belief in God was always about belief in Jesus. And as a Jew, that's the ultimate disconnect, I think, between the Jewish and Christian theologies, that we don't have, that the Jewish people don't have that intermediary that for many Christians is the only way in which you can understand God.
Well, right? So were you tempted to say to Scott, well, maybe you're not Catholic then anymore, maybe you're a Jew?
That's, you know, every time, you're the fifth person that I told that story to that has said, maybe Scott's a Jew.
Maybe you converted him.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. There's this website that I'm sure it's well known, BeliefNet. And several years ago, we both took this quiz on BeliefNet, which is it tells you what religion you really are. And it turns out we're both Quakers when it comes to
liberal Quakers.
Well, it's funny because you also write, I think somewhere in the book, Peter, that you've experienced sometimes jealousy of Scott's Christianity, that Christianity seems like a more emotional kind of
it's
religion.
It's more emotional. In Judaism, many times, especially in moments of prayer, you're really confronted with, you know, what mythologically, you know, Jews have always talked about as, you know, the Leviathan, or what Job encounters with this God that is so vast and unknowable that you can just hope that he's even hearing this prayer, if at all. Whereas for Christians, especially Catholics, you get all these saints, you get Mary, there's all these intercessions to, you don't never even have to think about God at all.
And Peter was mentioning before the literalness of Christianity, the saints literally having existed and now intercessing or interceding with God, Mary literally having been a person and now interceding with God. What Judaism still offers me, I think what I've learned from Peter, almost the most, is how to appreciate mythology as mythology, you know, as it was written. These are stories that teach us how to live in the world. They're not stories that tell us where Jesus was born or when Jesus was born.
So, Scott, you call yourself a Catholic atheist, by which I take it to mean that you think of yourself as primarily culturally Catholic, but you've lost your actual belief in a God. And yet, it sounds like together you all had arrived at a vision of faith that didn't have to be so literal. So what is there in Peter's view of God that you can't believe in?
I think it's the actual sense that there is a transcendent world. That world is the wrong word, and I think everything I say will probably be the wrong word, but that there is some kind of actual literal transcendence that gets beyond our human experience. In that conversation that Peter and I had, we talked about how, and this is something that I couldn't believe in, I guess, and how transcendence sort of rests on earthly experience, so sort of like a meniscus or something. They touch somehow. That I couldn't, I can't feel that weight of God.
The pressure, that's how we described
yeah.
it. For me, I can feel or I understand or I sense, or it's been my experience, that the divine exerts a pressure on the human in some way. Now, I will say that I believe the only way we can talk about that is metaphorically. I don't think anything we can ever say about that relationship that we have with the divine, there's no word that fully captures it. It's all metaphor. But I do believe that that thing exists beyond the metaphorical language, whereas for Scott, there simply is the metaphorical language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without anything behind it.
So then why do you remain interested in religion at all?
I grew up with religion, and there were these stories that are eternally true, if I can put the word eternally in quotation marks. And I was raised as a Catholic, and my ethics are rooted in Catholicism, and my life, the year is rooted in Catholicism. You know, how I place myself in a week is rooted in worship. It's rooted in, you know, really in some ways just about belonging.
So you're sort of making a distinction between faith as something you believe and faith as something you do.
Yeah, yeah. Faith and belief are not the same. I like to think of faith as rooted more in faithfulness. Mm-hmm. That faith without faithfulness, which means keeping your obligations, basically. So Peter actually, as a Jew, makes me a more religious Catholic because he simply provides me an opportunity to live my faith out in simple ways, by remembering birthdays, by making phone calls, by knowing and loving his son and his wife.
And I think that the other part of that is that the faithfulness and the way in which we relate to each other and to our families and to our friends, that there are those particular encounters that we have in those relationships like birth and death, which are the big ones. There's something for us about religious language that best captures how we understand those experiences.
You're both really describing a life that revolves around the moments when we feel the holiness of life, you know, which is kind of separate from what you actually believe about whether there is or isn't a God and what that God might be. Do you experience those moments of holiness at times unrelated to religion? I mean, for instance, you primarily connected around music originally, you know, rock and roll, jazz, you're both big music lovers. Does music ever seem to you like a religious experience?
Sometimes it's the only religious experience.
Peter has always had, I think, a deeper relationship with music. I think one that, for him, goes back further in his life. And so I've looked to Peter a lot for music lessons, in a sense, how to listen to music, where to find the holiness. So it's something we've recently been calling the ache, that there are certain songs that just ache. And
that sometimes I've never felt, even in the most, you know, beautiful religious services, sometimes still don't compare with what it's like to listen to Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's something about that human expression with transcendence, with capturing something that's beyond the human and putting it into this human language, which is music.
But am I right that Peter believes that there, in a sense, there is an answer to that longing, that there is something that exists that we're longing for? And Scott, you believe that we have the longing, but there is no answer.
Yeah, it's all.
I think
that's a great way to put it. Yeah, this is a constant longing.
And yet, what we, as two people from completely different traditions, can connect on is the longing.
Mm-hmm.
That we identify with that, and that in the end, it doesn't matter whether or not each of us believes the same thing about what's at the other side of it, because that doesn't have anything to do with our lives here together. What has to do with our lives here together is listening to that music.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it means to be alive.
Brother.
You're listening to a song called Two-Headed Boy by one of Peter and Scott's favorite bands, Neutral Milk Hotel. Scott Korb and Peter Biebergall talked with Anne Strainchamps about their book, The Faith Between Us.